As we're about to head on a very, very important journey and a year, certainly, if not life-altering experience. So it's extremely crucial whenever you approach an experience like this that you understand exactly what you're heading into. I'll give you a mushel if I can. You know, like the sports mushel, so I'll give a sports mushel. If you have there's a timeout, 2 seconds left, and the coach kind of breaks the huddle. You spaced out what the instructions were, and they pass the basketball game. You pass the ball, and you drive in for a layup, wide open layup. You think you won the game. You're down by 3 points. So, you know, as much as you hit the shot, you lost the game by one. You didn't follow the instructions. If you're not aware of the situation that you're currently in, and you kind of just go with the flow, you do what you think you're supposed to do, without questioning, asking what you're supposed to be doing here, there's a very, very good chance that you end up blowing the opportunity. When I was younger, there was a commercial. I don't want to tell you what it's for yet, but there was this guy who he walks into his house and he hears his wife on the phone. And she's saying to the person at the end of the phone, she says, "I hope he doesn't forget." And he's like, "What did I forget already?" And he thinks, looks at his watch like, "My anniversary." And he runs out of the house. And you see him, he like jumps over the fence and a dog barks at him and he kind of trips on the way over and rips his pants and the sprinklers go off and he's soaking wet. He walks in with a thing of flowers and he's like panting and panting and he's bleeding from his arm and his knee. And his wife's like, "Honey, you remember the pizza?" And he's like, "Oh," and it's for DiGiorno pizza. That was what it was for. Now the truth is that if a person was aware of what he was heading towards, then when he got there and he was prepared for it, he can amass a tremendous amount of success. But if a person is kind of lost and just jumps into whatever is in front of him right now, there's a very, very good chance that he misses the point, he misses the goal. Rosh Hashanah is a tremendous opportunity for us. But it's a day that's very, very complex. On one hand, there's fear and there's awe. We say it's Yom HaDin, we say Nisan HaTokev, we people are frightened. Same time, we're Besimcha, we have new fruits, Shechiyana, we're very confident. How is it possible to have a time with such confidence and excitement at the same time that we should be panicking and shaking in our boots? In order to understand the koach of the day, there's a few cues and clues that Chazal gave us. For example, certain minhagim or halachas that we have, one of the most famous ones, we know that we do on the night of Rosh Hashanah, it's called, we have like a little seder. We have certain minhagim, certain foods. We say Yihiratzon. We should be like heads and not like tails. We should have a Shana Tova u'mitzuka. It's brought down the Shulchan Aruch, brings down these halachas. There's a whole set in the Shulchan Aruch of which foods you should buy, which food you should be eating from. The significance of each food, that's so important to us because the food sounds like a positive thing in Hebrew. And we eat these foods to try to encourage ourselves to have a great new year, a sweet new year. Is it that easy? You eat a food that has positive implications as far as the words in Hebrew, and we're off to a great start. I remember there was a movie I saw a long time ago called Major League. And if you haven't seen it, so I don't say you've seen it anymore, but you missed out. There was a scene when, in the beginning of the season, Bob Uecker, who was the announcer for the Cleveland Indians, who was the team it was about, said you can always tell how the season goes by the first batter. You always know from the first batter how the season's going to go. So Rosh Hashanah has a very, very similar nature to it. Right now we are here for what might be, for some of us, the most important year of our lives. Might be. And I'll tell you why. We come in confused. Or maybe not. We should be confused. We're not confused. We should be confused. We come in with our minds clear in the direction we want to head into, but maybe the direction that God didn't intend for us. And we have 1 year to try our hardest to kind of, you might call being brainwashed, but I would call more re-angle your perspective. You have 1 year to figure out that life is about much more than just having a great job, a beautiful wife, a lot of money. It's much more than that. It's about going through your daily life, that every single waking second is significant and it has great potential. And this is the year to figure it out. So if Rosh Hashanah is a time that's going to get ourselves rolling for this year, that it's perhaps the most important day of our lives at this point in time is coming up on Sunday night through Tuesday night. The problem is that we don't really know what we're supposed to be doing in these days. We know we daven a lot. But was there some underlying message or idea that we can learn from to kind of guide us through the process? So we know, if you look at Mishnah Berurah, he brings down how you act in this day will affect your year. I remember when I was younger, my mom used to tell me, if you sleep in Rosh Hashanah, you have a sleepy year, which I must have done a number of times when I was younger. If you get angry in Rosh Hashanah, you're going to have a very angry year. And Chafetz Chaim says to Mishnah Berurah, you should be very careful not to get angry on Rosh Hashanah, because that's going to set the tone for your year. So what exactly should we be doing Rosh Hashanah? I'm just learning all day long? So maybe. But if we look in Chazal and some of the hints that they gave us, you're going to find a very, very fascinating, I think, approach to and creative to what Rosh Hashanah is all about and how we maximize the day. The one very unique thing, which certainly when you see what was chosen, it even becomes more unique, is the Kriyas HaTorah that was chosen to be read during Rosh Hashanah. If I ask someone in this room, Justin, I ask you, you're right in front of me, what should you think would be the logical choice of Torah reading on Rosh Hashanah? What would you think? Okay, so what do we have Rosh Hashanah? I mean, there's parts of the Torah that describe a holiday, but what event do you think we should read about Rosh Hashanah time? Tshuva, okay, good. Tshuva's good. That's a message, definitely a lesson. My separation is creation of the world, creation of mankind at least. Hayom haras olam, even though it's true that maybe the world was created 6 days earlier, but the man's creation, we should read, usually read about events that happen on the day. We should be reading all about Maisa Bereishis. We do not read that. We do read from Sefer Bereishis, but not Maisa Bereishis. What do we read about? What's our Kriyas HaTorah we read? Akedas Yitzchak and Leidas, there's two of them, right? Leidas Yitzchak and Akedas Yitzchak. But the birth of Yitzchak, the story of Yishmael, and the second day we read about Akedas Yitzchak. What's the connection? What's the connection between that and Rosh Hashanah? So there's a tshuva element. There's certainly, you know, there's a tshuva. What happened in the case? Why is that? So because we almost sacrificed the tremendous chuyos that we have for the Zecher Kedis Yitzchak. But what exactly is unique about those Kriyas HaTorahs? So when I was actually in the Gris Kollel, sitting in that side of the room, about, must have been 16 years ago. You guys were 2 years old. Wow. So I noticed a fascinating thing coming up over and over again, and it bothered me. And I remember when I was just thinking to myself, like, what in the world does that mean? And it dawned on me, it's my own shot, you can argue with it if you want to, you're probably wrong, but you can argue with it if you'd like to. I'll read to you just some highlights from this Torah story that we're going to read about. So the first one is in Perikov Aleph, Pasuk Aleph, Hashem Pakar Sarak Asher Amar, V'yas Hashem L'Sarak Asher Diber. I'm going to fast forward because the birth is just the beginning part. It goes well beyond the birth. It goes all about into the story of Yishmael and Yitzchak and Hagar. You'd expect on Kriyas HaTorah, Rosh Hashanah time, we wouldn't be reading about, you know, our arch rival, our arch enemy, you know, the ancestor of our arch enemy, the Yishmaelim, Yishmael and Hagar. That becomes the backbone of our Kriyas HaTorah. So I'm going to read to you an important part. And something that strikes me and is difficult to understand. Story goes that after Yishmael is using Yitzchak as target practice, we're told by Chazal, so Sarah sees enough and she tells Avram, I want both him and her out of the house. Hagar and Yishmael out of the house is not good for my son, for Yitzchak. Avram's brokenhearted. This is his son, this is his firstborn son. But as God tells Avram, and as we should all know for our own lives, married lives, whatever your wife tells you to do, you listen to her. And sure enough, Avram, at least the Ashkenazim. Right? I don't know if that means even, but I'm going to ignore that. Come on. Avram sends Hagar out, sends Yishmael out, and gives them on their way out a skin of water and some bread. Korah. Was he Ashkenaz?
He listened to his wife and look what happened to him.
Owen Ben Pelas. Same story. Look what happened to him. Listen to his wife. Depends on the wife, I guess, right? Depends on the wife. Anyways. As they're wandering in the desert, and Yishmael and Hagar are rapidly running out of their food and their drink. GPS didn't work back then. Waze was having a tough day apparently, and they get lost, and they run out of provisions, and game over. And Hagar places her child Ishmael by a tree, a bow shot away, and says, "I don't want to see my son die." I'll read the words inside for you. She goes and she separates herself a bow shot away. "Ki amra alerab mosa yalad. I don't want to see my child pass on." She sits away from the child, she raises her voice up and she cries. And says the Torah, "Vayishma Elokim es kol hanar," that Hashem hears the voice of the lad, referring to Yishmael. "Vayikra malach Elokim ahagar min hashmayim v'yomer la malach agar," what's going on? "Al tiri," don't worry, Hashem has heard kol hanar basherusham. And sure enough, God makes a great miracle, "Vayikach Elokim es einah," he opens up her eyes and she sees it right in front of her, is a well of water or an oasis of water, and she's saved and he's saved as well. And the story ends happily ever after. I want to point out two things here. One thing that bothers me, and one thing just to write a note for the next part we're about to read together. What bothers me is that when it described that HaKadosh Baruch Hu heard the voice of the cry, it wasn't the person that we knew was crying. It says that a Hagar cried. The next thing we know, Hashem hears the voice of the Nar. It never mentions anywhere that there was even a cry that was uttered from Ishmael's lips. Why throw that part out? That seems to be the moment in time that everything changed. And yet, no mention of that in the Torah. But I do want to point out one important thing. When it describes Yishmael in this pasuk, it says, "V'Yishmael Elokim es kol hanar." He's termed a nar. Nar is in English, how would you say nar? A lad. Give me the age bracket of a lad.
9 to 12.
9 to 12. Okay. It's a young lad. Young, if I said young lad, it'd be 9 to 12.
I was a lad when I was that age.
You were? Yes. You sure were. Whatever that means. I would say lad is like early teens. You were mature, Adam. You were very mature as a lad. You may be 9 to 12, but more like, you know, 15 for some people. 17. Okay. Kriyas Torah, second day. Moving one parsha, one parak over. The story of Akedas Yitzchak. Avraham Avinu gave up his son. His son that he was promised would be the child that would carry on his name. The child with his beloved wife Sarah, to take that child and to slaughter it. And we know, we see in the Torah that Avraham is torn at first. Which child do you want? Asher Havta, I love both of them. Bincha Bechorech Yitzchak. He takes Yitzchak with him. And we're told, I'll read inside, Avram takes, finally, he straps Yitzchak down. Well, I should go back for a second. But Yomer Avram el Narav, Perichav Beis Pasuk Hei, Shmulachem Poim HaChamor, you remain here with the donkey, Vaniva Nar Nechad Kohen, me and the lad will go until there, right over there, above the mountain, and we'll bow and we'll come back. So Avram takes the wood, and he puts him on his son Yitzchak to carry. He takes in his hand to start a fire up, as well as the machete, the knife. They go together. And all of a sudden Yitzchak's like, "Hey, Dad, I think we forgot something at home." He says, "You know, what happened to the animal? I'm supposed to sacrifice an animal. What happened to the animal?" Avram says back to him, God will show us the seh, comma, my son. Rashi over here says, you are the seh. And they went together. They got to the place that Hashem said. Avram builds him his veach. He puts the eitzim together. Vayakodes Yitzchak beno. He binds Yitzchak on the altar. Avram takes his hand down. He takes the machete to slaughter his son. Do not cast your hand down upon the lad. Don't do anything else to him, because now I know that you're in fact God fearing. It calls him a nar. You know how old? Go back. You know how old Yishmael was at the time when the story happened? about 17, 15. After, he's 13 years older than Yitzhak. Yitzhak's probably 2 or 3 at the time. So he's 16. Lad worthy. Older lad worthy. Yitzhak, we're told, was 37 years old. That is far from lad worthy. And yet he's called a lad. And number two, who's the hero of the story? Who's one of the heroes of the story? Avram for sure. But I argue that Yitzhak perhaps was even a greater hero. God never spoke to Yitzhak. He willingly sounds like. And now the Chazal said, he said to his father, tie me as tight as you can. I'm frightened to flinch and make myself apostle korban. Wouldn't that make sense for the Torah to tell us about? Where's the part where Yitzhak's scratching his head and saying, hey dad, we forgot the korban. Next thing you know, he's bound up. Did Avram clock him over the head? Did he put alcohol over his nose and mouth to knock him out? Doesn't seem that way. But we'd expect there to be some passage that describes that Yitzhak's like, dad, take me. Put me on. I want to partner with you. Yet the Torah doesn't mention it at all. Third portion, which is not from the Torah, but from the Haftorah, read in the first day, is the story of Chana. The story goes, Chana is married to Elkanah, who's also married to Penina. And Penina has a number of children, and Chana, Nebuch was barren, and she had no children. And she could not be consoled. She was miserable. And we're told that she would cry, and she left her husband and went to daven. We'll get to that point in a minute. When all said and done, Chana is blessed with a child. It's the fast-forward version of it. Eli, Kohen Gadol, sees her davening and thinks she's drunk, and he questions her, and she says, no, in fact, I'm really bitter. I'm not drunk at all. And sure enough, he blesses her and says, you should have whatever you daven for, you should have a child, and they have a child in the end. Listen to what happens the next year. It says in Perek Aleph and in Shmuel Aleph, in Pasuk Chaf, Vayidat Kufas Ayamim Vatar Chana Matele Bein, Vatikra Shmo Shmuel, Ki Me Hashem Shil Tiv. Because I requested it from God. Vayala Ish Elkanah V'chol Beiso. The next year, Elkanah and his entire family, or almost entire family, were going up back to pay their respects to the Mishkan. L'zboch L'Hashem Ezevach Ayamim V'yas Nidro. V'chana Lo Alasan. Chana did not join him on this journey. Listen closely. Ki amra le'isha, she says to her husband, Ad yigamel hanar. Lad, how old is Ishmael? Is Shmuel right now? He's 1. He's definitely not 2 because the Ad yigamel is until the age of 2 years old. You're nursing. It calls him a lad once again. So now I have Ishmael being called a lad. Lad appropriate age. I have Yitzhak being called a lad. 37 years old, according to Zohar and many others. And I have Shmuel being called a lad at the ripe young age of 1 year. All selections chosen to be read on Rosh Hashanah. Coincidence? What's the connection? And why does the Torah not tell us of their lad moment? Of the crying of the lad? Of the agreeing of the lad to be bound up on the altar? And we'll get to Chana and Shmuel in a minute from now. The word Nar, and you'll see this, I mean, obviously it says this here, but the Shana Bekas might see it, they're going through Kiddushin Bekias. The meaning of the word lad, Nar, or Na'ara. You know what that the stage of a Na'ara is? How old is a Na'ara? 12 to 12 and a half. A extremely crucial age. It's the age when a person, when a girl goes from going from non-adulthood to becoming an adult. It's the transformation from category A through to category C, which is full-fledged adult. A nar does not only mean, it also means, does not only mean years, how old you are, it means a transformation that will change you around forever. That's what a nar means. And I suggest to you that the nar being mentioned, and the reason for these passages chosen, Rosh Hashanah, it's because what Chazal are telling you is that you have the opportunity right now to make a significant change in your life. I've spoken to many boys this year who so much want. I want to do. I plan on doing. I hope to plan to do. To want. To do. To plan. So how many plans and wants you want? Depends how late you are. But everyone has a vision and a hope. So the truth is that we're about to get to the day when your dreams come true. Anything that you want. Because Chazal are telling you that if you want to become a Nar and change everything around, it's about to happen. With one problem. It didn't tell us how to do it. Because it forgot to tell us what Yishmael did, and it didn't tell us what Yitzchak did. So if I want to become a lad, I'm lost. Great. They became lads. Great. I read all about it in Rosh Hashanah, but not great is I have no idea what they did to get there. But the good news is, we have one passage in the Gemara. And I copied it for you on the top of the page. Maseches Brachos. Shana Aleph, guys, we'll be seeing this year, hopefully. And Daf Lamed Aleph Mabez. The story with Chana actually has a lot of depth to it. It's not found in the actual text. It's found in the Torah Shebaal Peh of the text. I'm going to skip down to smack in the middle of the paragraph I gave you, about 6-7 lines down. It says, Imra O Tireh, towards the beginning of the line, 6 lines down. If you don't have one, look on someone who has one, please, and follow along with me. Imra O Tireh, if you surely will see, this was going on when Chana was praying, when Chana was davening. If you surely will see, she's talking to God. Why Imra O Tireh? Amar Rabbi Lazar, Amar Chana, thank God's broken. Chana says to Hashem the following thing. Ribbono Shel Olam. Imro Mutaf, if you hear me, if you see me in pain, I'm doubting for a child. Mutaf, fantastic. Great. V'im lav, but if you do not see me and refuse to heed my prayer, Tireh, listen up, God. Eilech v'satireh v'snei Elkanah ba'ali. I'm going to go alone in front of my husband, Elkanah. He's going to accuse me of being a sota. The cave of the Mistatrina, Mashkli Mesota, the Iatao said to Torah Schaplasa, you won't make your Torah into a book of lies. Your Torah promises, as says by Midbar, hey, Vniksa Mizra Zara. If I'm found to be Naki, innocent, I get child. So God, you have two choices. Either hear my tefillah right now, or I'll make you hear it. Because I'll make myself into the famous Sota. And you yourself promised in your Torah that if the woman is innocent of crimes, she'll be blessed with a child. So God, you decide what you want to do. Really? Chutzpah. Who dares to threaten God like that? God can snap his fingers and she'd be gone. And yet, Chana turns and says that line. Not only that, but God doesn't call her bluff. He says, you know what? Okay, hold up. Don't do anything crazy. I'll give you a child. Just don't do that. What? She twists God's arm, threatens him. Not only does he not zap her, but he rewards her for it. How could that possibly be? So Chana was teaching us what it means to become a Nar. Do you know what it could have meant? I mean, we all read the book over in high school, The Scarlet Letter. You know what it means? To be accused by your spouse, by your neighbors, of being adulterous? Could you imagine the embarrassment? How humbling that would be to people look at you and they would accuse you of crimes? And even to the end, they found out it's not even true, because at the end, you didn't blow up. But to have people stare. It's terrible. But Chana said the following thing. I do not care what people think about me. I don't care. I don't care if they suspect me. They could think I'm foolish. They could think I'm disgusting. I am a single-track mind right now. I want a child. I will do anything in my power to get one. And she did. And God says that's exactly what you needed to do. To commit so fully that nothing else mattered to you. Nothing else. To get this job done is all you cared about. I grant you with your gift. When Chazal are telling you on Rosh Hashanah you can become a Nar, it means Chazal are telling you that you have the opportunity if you are all in. All in. You're davening for your family, you're davening for your friends, you're davening for yourself for a beautiful year. You know, you might do it like this. Look at my eyes. Look, I'm chuckling. And your friend's like, what? Really? You? Please. You don't remember 2 days ago? Who are we kidding? You might open your eyes and be like, you know, he's right. Like, I can't do that. I can't see my friend see me chuckling like that. Take a piece of paper in my pocket with things I wrote down and prepare for. I can't do that. I can't be that guy. And then you kind of like, you don't go through with it. And then you have a, okay, Rosh Hashanah. Then you'll have an okay year. But if you want to become a Nar, it means that you do not do anything. You're a one-track mind. I am all in. I don't care what my friend thinks. I don't care what my friend says. I don't care how long I take. I don't care if I even shed tears right now. I will do everything that I can to become a different person. And it starts right now, and I'm all in. That's a Nar. Chazal are telling you, if you want to excel in Rosh Hashanah time, you prepare. You demand from God, help me be closer to you. I'm begging you, I just want to figure you out as best as I can. I'm all in. Eyes are closed. I'm even crying. Not as a fake, because I'm desperate to see it to be true. That is Rosh Hashanah. The truth is, there's a story that hopefully you know. You probably heard about it already. That's it's an unbelievable story, and I'm not going to quote the whole thing inside. It's the second source on the page. Gemara about Zara, Blazer, Badrdoya, who was a man who visited many, many, many harlots, all of them according to this, and all of them that he could get his hands on, except for one who he put a lot of money in order to find her. I'm going to fast forward the story. At the end of the day, after a lot happens, and if you know the story, you know why I'm skipping it. He does tshuva. And he does such a level of tshuva that he cries himself to death. And after he died, it says the following thing. Bacha Rebbe. When Rebbe heard the story, Rebbe cried. V'yomer. Yesh kon olamo b'shkama shanim. V'yesh kon olamo b'sha'achas. There are those who acquire a place in the world to come after many years. And there are those who acquire a place in the world to come in a moment. Why did Rebbe cry over that? As a Rebbe, if you would tell me that a student or a child of mine in a moment could earn Olam Haba, would I cry? Maybe he's crying for joy. But it doesn't sound like that from the story. It's like he's crying for joy. What's he crying about? He should be jumping. He should be applauding and cheering. Why is it a sad thing that you can be kodol on b'sha'achas? Why is that a sad thing? So I heard people say beforehand, maybe he was upset because he worked so hard and someone else got it so quickly. That's definitely not pshat. No one is regretting working hard to do a great thing. Rebbe's not regretting that. But I heard the name of David Miller, the Rosh Kollel of Gruss as well, that I think later on saw in Sichos Musar, maybe he quoted even when he told me the first time. His Rebbe was crying because every single person in the world has their moments. Everybody. Every person in the world has a moment when there's just a clarity. We mentioned a little bit in Shal Shudas. Rafi mentioned it, and I was about it a little as well. That there's a moment of clarity in your life, and you just got it. I clicked. I got it. And he cried because every single person in the world has a moment like that, but we don't have so many stories of what happened afterwards. Because most of the people in the stories had a moment and ignored it. They had inspiration and let it go. And there's no gemaras about them, and you never heard of them. Because they chose not to act on it. That is reason to cry. Because Baruch Hu never lets anyone in this world go by without that moment in time coming your way. It could happen at any point. It could happen already, maybe, for some of you. It could be happening in the future. It could happen right now. But every single person is going to be guaranteed a moment that if they take advantage of it and they grab it, that's it. Life changer. I quote to you the next source, which is Maseches Avos, Rabbi Nosson, which actually goes through and explains a moment that happened to one of our greatest, greatest Tanaim. And it was a moment that you'd expect to be seeing in the Discovery Channel and not written about in Midrashim. Rabbi Akiva was walking on the way, at the time he was only Akiva. And he walked by and he saw, he heard a noise, he looked down on the ground, he saw a rock that had on it a little pool of water. He looked deeper and closer, he saw that actually the rock had eroded and there was a pool of water sitting inside the rock. And he heard drop by drop, he looked up and he saw there was a cliff and had little drops of water dripping down on the rock, and he noticed, and he realized that this rock was at one point in time completely intact, but with drip by drop, it had corroded the rock and made a hole in it. You and I might be like, hey, it's pretty cool. Take our phones out, take a picture, Snapchat it to our friends. Rabbi Akiva paused and says, whoa, kal vachomer. First thing he said, kal vachomer. If a rock that is so hard can be penetrated with mere water, then my heart, which is like a rock which is so hard, can be penetrated with Torah. Well, first of all, what a kal vachomer for an amateur. For not Rebbe yet. Unbelievable. But the reason why is because he cared. Because he wanted to find things that inspired him. But the most important word is the next word I did not yet read. Okay. And this, here it is. It's right, the fourth line. The fourth line in the beginning of the line after the parentheses. The word is miyad. Miyad, immediately. The moment that you have this inspirational opportunity, you have two choices. I'll sleep on it. That's interesting. I'll sleep on that. Let me think about it later on. Or miyad. You jump at the opportunity. Rafi again mentioned it the other day. Shal showed us last week. You have a lightning bolt. And it shows you. Rabbi Akiva Tatz, Living Inspired, actually quotes this mashal. It shows your surroundings for a few moments in time. You can either marvel at the beauty of the wilderness, or you could get into your sprinter stance and you run as fast as you can for 3 seconds so you lose the visions that you had a few moments ago. But it all has to be miyad. If you're inspired and you say, let me sleep on it, and in the morning I'm going to act on it, it's too late. It's actually on the other side of the page over here, and I'll end with this point, or one last point after this point. There's a book called Screwtape Letters from C.S. Lewis. Varon Lichtenstein, one of the Racha, pointed out that perhaps you couldn't read this in the bathroom because it gives you thoughts of Kedusha, even though it's written by a Christian, but about the Yetzer Hara. It's about the letters that were given on between an apprentice devil and a senior devil. And the senior devil is describing to the apprentice devil how to go about tricking mankind to doing bad things. So everything you see over here, that we read right now, is of course the reverse of what we really want it to be in the end. I once had a patient, a sound atheist, who used to read the British Museum, says the senior devil. One day as he sat reading, I saw a train of thought in his mind beginning to go the wrong way. The enemy, of course, was at his elbow in a moment, the enemy being, of course, Kedusha. Before I knew where I was, I saw my 20 years' work beginning to totter. If I had lost my head and begun to attempt a defense by argument, I should have been undone. I would never be able to convince this person, this is not, I don't speak not in here anymore, couldn't convince him logically, because logic was against me. So I was not such a fool. I struck instantly at the part of the man which I had best under my control and suggested that it was just about time he had some lunch. The enemy presumably made the counter-suggestion that this was much more important than lunch. At least I think it must have been his line, because when I said, quite. In fact, much too important to tackle at the end of a morning. The patient brightened up considerably, and by the time I had added, much better come back after lunch and go into it with a fresh mind, he was already halfway to the door. Once he was in the street, the battle was won. I showed him a newsboy shot in the midday paper, a number 73 bus going past, and before he reached the bottom of the steps, I got into him an unalterable conviction that whatever odd ideas might come into a man's head when he was shut up alone with his books, a healthy dose of quote-unquote real life, which he meant the bus and the newsboy, was enough to show him that all that sort of thing just couldn't be true. He knew he'd had a narrow escape, and in later years was fond of talking about that inarticulate sense for actuality, which is our ultimate safeguard against the aberrations of mere logic. He is now safe in our Father's house. The way to diffuse the Yetzer Hara is you act. You hit a moment of inspiration, you jump at it. You're inspired. After this, we go sing at a tish. When your tish is over, you go downstairs to the base medish. You learn 3 minutes of Torah. You write down a little notebook for yourself. Who do you want to daven for? The moment that you lose, when you say, wow, what a schmooze that was. What a singing that was. What a daven it was. Let me take a nap. I'll wake up later on. I'll be refreshed to take on the next challenge I have coming my way. Then you miss your alarm clock. Slept through mincha. Oh my gosh. What was I thinking? This is too hard. To close up, Rosh Hashanah is a day that's built for us to be a nar. You don't have to seek it out. It's coming. It's right around the corner. You're going to hear the leni. It's going to scream the word nar multiple times to you. It's trying to explain to you that you have the opportunity now to take a moment of your life and just go zoom. And everything could change. But it requires you to want it. Who doesn't want truth? Who doesn't want meaning or inspiration? Who would rather spend their days thinking that life is about chasing physical wants? And only when you finish it, you feel like you're empty inside. That's what you want? Or for the first time, you might realize there's something much deeper going on right now. I can become a nar, I can change everything around. I'll tell you one last thing, and then I'll close with this. And it's something I wouldn't usually share with you, but it's a little freaky. And it's extremely scary, but it's very appropriate for what we're about to go through for the next few days up to Yom Kippur. Tefillah is the main part of these coming days. And if you prepare, by prepare, I mean you write down before Yom Tov starts, Parnassa, who you have in mind, get their Hebrew names, tell your parents, I'm going to daven for you. Refuah Shalema, call people on the phone, I'm going to think about you in Eretz Yisrael, Yerushalayim, your Kodesh, get their names. Parnassa, inspiration, children, shiduchim. You should have a list that is in your sitter, and before you take pieces back, you should look at it, and you should be crying your heart out, knowing that you're in a position right now in Yerushalayim, and a day that makes you into a nar to change people's fortunes. And if it's so hard for you to get this done, I want to share with you one last shot. Hachana l'tfila, bottom piece over here. Keep this with you, not only now, but in general in your sitter. Morning is a little freaky. Tzadik Elokai, Rabbi Aaron HaGadol miKarlin, hidgim es mahalich hachana shlo l'tfila. Rabbi Aaron HaGadol miKarlin gave a model of what his tefillah was like every single davening. In quotes, ani medame b'machshavashli, I imagine myself shani mutal b'mita. I'm lying in my bed, ula'at la'at akochot ozimotzi, and slowly but surely my strength is leaving me. I klod a nefesh mamish until I'm mamish gone from this world. Ukvar hachever kadisha magim elai abaita. The chever kadisha has arrived and they came to my house. Yosim kol achanu l'kvura, and they've already prepared me for burial. Ani margish al gufi seder atara. I feel my body going through the tara process, being taken to the mikvah. I have waters poured over my body to cleanse me. I'm no longer here anymore. And I hear the Chevra Kedisha requests of me for slicha if they handle my body inappropriately in the process of burying me. They put me in the death shrouds. They put me in my coffin. The procedure continues on from my home. Vav says darko levesa kvaros, and it takes me to the cemetery. Marim es ha'aron l'anicha b'kavar, they pick up my coffin, my body, to put me in my grave. V'idei kruz es emin ha'shmaim, and all of a sudden a voice comes out from heaven. Latzor es ha'kvura, stop the burial. Anachim nosim la'yudi hazeh od yizdamnu l'ftoach es piv l'ispalel if ne'adon kol. I want to give this Jew another chance to open his mouth and to daven, tefila achas v'sulo, one last davening, and then it's over. Rak achareya tefila tamshichu b'kvura. When that's over, continue burial. Kol ze ani wrote shomea b'diyon shli lifnei kol tefila. Every single davening, he had this in mind. Crazy. But you need to have it in mind a few times. Rosh Hashanah, Kippur, Asar Yom Tshuva. Every single thing for your year is in the balance right now. This is your last tefillah of life. Would you stop? Would you run through the words and just stop and end it? You would sit before you took Jesus back, you would cry your heart out, think of every single person in your life. Who you wronged, who you want to help out, who needs this. You would cry and you would cry and you would cry because this is it. You would never want it to end. It's about to happen. Sunday night, Monday night, Tuesday. The year is in the balance. You can daven for anything that you want, for anyone that you want. To rush through it is the biggest waste. This is it. This is the last one for you. Last tefillah. And then it's over. At least that tefillah is over. Plan for it. Understand the kedusha possibilities ahead of you. You can even cry that you don't feel connected. Maybe forget even. That's probably the best thing to cry for. I'm trying my hardest to get close to you. Please help me. You should cry over that. What do you think reaction would be of a father whose son walks into him and says, "Dad, I just want to be closer. We're not close enough," when he starts to cry. I would pick him up. Give me the biggest hug. Hug it out. You have the chance to hug it out. You cry your hardest for yourself, for your loved ones, for everybody. Plan in advance. Because you're about to get to a time that you can change everything around. You can become the biggest nar. It happens one time a year. We're about to be at it. Give you the following bracha. You should be inspired much in your life. When you're inspired, miyad, you should act upon that inspiration. And the most important thing is you should understand the difference between what's real in the world versus what we call over here, C.S. Lewis calls the real world, a newsboy, politicians, buses, monuments. That's the real world. It's not the real world. Some people's real world, but that's so sad. You're right now in Yerushalayim, you're in the real world. You're in a place in the real day. You're with the real mindset. It's not brainwashing. This is where you're supposed to be in life. You've been brainwashed up until now. I wish you much hatzlacha and bracha and your tefillahs. You should merit to have a ksiva chasima tova, and all your tefillahs be answered l'tova.
Rabbi, just one, two quick things. There are a number of times that the guy came up here and he made a request, and I also want to add to